Good morning and welcome to another exciting edition of Day 4 with the man Frank Skalish. We're recorded today, Frank.
Yes, we are.
It's not a bad thing. It just means that we both have things going on. I'm currently at Lake Logan Martin, hopefully catching plump spotted bass. Plump is a word that is definitely underused in the fish. Like, who doesn't like to catch a plump spotty?
Oh, dude, I live for the plump.
You might regret that with people's editing abilities these days, Frank.
Yeah, I might regret that. Word of the day is plump.
You are actually kind of in my neck of the woods. You're actually in Springfield, Missouri.
Yes, I am. College baseball, watching my son's team play. Hopefully they don't get knocked out of the series.
That was a rousing speech. You should give that exact speech to them.
I'm just being brutally.
What is that called?
Realistic.
What's that speech called where the coach comes in and gives you the old rah-rah before the game?
The pump-up speech? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, there's some sort of word for it. I can't.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I drew a blank.
Easiest one. I've heard hundreds of them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Over my time.
Exactly. They give you they give you that motivational speech to.
Yeah, motivational speech. That's it right there. That's what I was
thinking. To get you cranking.
Hopefully you guys don't go out there and lose.
Hopefully you guys don't choke. And I went to the Bill Belichick School of Coach Speeching.
And you just casually walk out of the room.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, good luck, guys. See you next year.
I'll see you in the dugout.
Exactly.
Hopefully you guys don't choke.
I'm so sorry to be making fun of this, but no, they're a good team. They're a good team, good group of guys. I met some of them.
Wait, this is Josh's team?
Yeah, Josh's team, Clark.
He's been on BTL?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Clark University. I mean, they're typical college kids. I hate to say that because it ages me, but they're typical college kids, and it's kind of a blast, because they think they're the first ones to figure all this shit out. Yeah. And, you know, we've done it a long time ago.
So your speech is now, just want to let you guys know, your typical college kids. You highly overvalue yourself, and hopefully we don't lose.
Hopefully you don't choke.
Now let's get out there and play some ball.
Let's get out there and play some hungover baseball.
I need to call you before every open so you can give me a motivational speech like that.
I know. Seriously, dude, because it shows you the options you got. You're either going to try hard, play, and win, or you're going to
not try hard and suck.
And suck. So there you go.
The worst option is when you try hard and you still suck, because that's when you have to look deep inside yourself and realize that, like I said, either you drastically overvalued yourself or you have a lot of internal work to do.
Yeah.
I think that's why a lot of guys, I think me, probably me included, you, everybody who fishes, when you have just a crap day on the water, you're in kind of a not a great mood.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's 100%. A little part of you that, you know, wants to get on the water and think, I can get on the water. I can always make the right adjustments. I can figure it out. I can come in with a good satchel of bass. And then when you don't, you take it a little personally because the results did not match your expectations or maybe vision of yourself on the water.
Yeah, it's a personal hit, dude. Your ego takes a personal hit. Your confidence takes a personal hit, and you got to forget about it. I mean, that's the one thing. Jeez, oh, man, that's the one thing I learned with this stupid-ass sport we do. You have to literally, when you throw up a bad one, you got to leave it at the lake. You can't bring it with you because you got another lake almost immediately after that. You got to start to figure out,
You kind of experienced that this spring a little in some past weeks. I remember you called and you were like, oh, I'm just, I haven't been able to find them. Yeah. I don't want to. And it was mainly a combination of like weird weather, watercolor, and level. And then last week on the show, just beaming with pride and confidence because you went out and absolutely smoked both largies and smallmouth on a cool pattern that you figured out. And now all is right with the world.
Right. And it is. And it's so weird because I was like, I don't want to say despondent when I wasn't doing well, but I was really getting aggravated with myself because I was picking the wrong lakes at the wrong time. And I was putting myself in conditions that were
trying to force it.
Yeah. Ridiculous. You know what I mean? And it was very forced and not just freewheeling. And so I just had to take a deep breath because the rain isn't stopping. I mean, today we're pouring down rain, or while we're doing this show, it's pouring down rain right now. Mm-hmm. And we're just not getting a break. So, but when you finally get, you know, finally start to click again and things start to work again, you're right. You feel way better. I mean, I was feeling like really bad. You know, and I don't have anything on the line, dude. I'm not competing anymore. You know,
you're still you may not be competing, but you're still incredibly competitive.
Oh gosh, yeah. I can't. Yeah, that's a problem. that's a problem because I say I want to go fish and enjoy myself, and I don't want that competitive edge. But the problem is that we. Especially you'll see too, because you've been tournament fishing for so long, when you hit the water, it's a personal challenge. And then, and if things don't go right, you look at it as a fail. And that is the competitive edge. And it's,
how competitive was this guy?
That guy was competitive.
I just keep it right there, Frank. Yeah, I'm always there.
I'm witnessing that. That guy was competitive in a lot of different ways.
Well, last week when we did the evening show, I saw maybe your alter ego. It came up in the comments and I liked it and I wrote it down, and maybe we could kind of dive into that alter ego today. Someone said, Uncle Crank, which I'm not sure is a great, like, if, as long as we keep it in the fishing terms, Uncle Crank is a good, terminology, but, we got some stuff with bills on it. That wiggle today, right, Frank?
Yeah, you know, we do so much on this show to try to teach to you know, it's
the three E's: entertain, educate, and engage.
Correct.
So, I got that tattooed on my lower back.
Outstanding. And so anyway, I'm not even going there either. Is that your tramp stamp?
just three E's right there. I'll never forget it.
Oh, I got something to say, but I can't say that. Oh my God, is that bad? I'm writing it down so I can tell you after the show.
Oh gosh. Sorry, back on track. Oh, we're having a good one this morning already. We're 8 minutes in. We're 9 minutes in, Frank.
I can't even say this on the air.
Then don't.
I won't. So anyway, back to the, hey, let's get serious now.
Okay. This is fishing. This isn't supposed to be fun.
Right. It's supposed to be very.
This is supposed to be torturous for decades on end with slight moments of hope.
That's right. So we do a lot. I teach you guys following the fish, start out, work in, et cetera, et cetera. This I have a video I want you guys to watch. This video never aired. And here's the premise of it. It's actually a fall fishing video, but it is exactly what you do in the springtime, because the fall process and the spring process are almost identical. So it will explain to you how to break down a lake really quickly. A lot of guys only have a weekend to fish. They got one day on the water. You gotta eliminate the water. You have to figure something out quickly. And this video is almost perfect way to do that. So I thought, and that it, I let Matt watch it first, and I thought that because it takes a 4-minute video, and it shows you everything I do to get to the pattern, and it's actually pretty accurate on what would happen in spring as well as the fall, and it'll help you guys break this down really quickly, so when you have limited time to fish, you're not wasting it, basically. Is that good? Was that good, Matt? Was that a good
fantastic motivational? You ready to roll it?
Rock it.
All right, here we go.
Hey, I haven't been on this lake in over a year. For as far into fall as we are, I was very surprised at how warm the water temperature was. So I'm going to have to mix it up a little bit. I got, you know, half a dozen rods out on the boat. We're going to try to figure out exactly where these bass are. And so I'm going to focus on stuff that's really close to the bank. And we're going to work our way in, and we're just going to see what we see. So I'm going to have some Carolina rigs out, some square bills out. And I'm going to have a 7A bomber, the next gen colors. I'm really excited to throw these here because the bass are really predicated on shad today. I'm not really casting all over the place. I got a bump here that I'm fishing, so I'm trying to get on the corners. I'm off of it so I can cover just the end of it. And so I'm every time I'm changing casting angles, I'm changing the way it's coming over that break line. I didn't get bit out there. I worked my way in around. Now I'm going to run in and I'm going to start fishing more bank related stuff with the square bill. There he is. How about that? First bank related piece of cover we went to, I caught one. That might be telling us something, guys. There he is. That's a good one. He came off of those branches that were out there. I saw the branches underwater out there and slow rolled this square right through them branches. I mean, the fat boy, that's a good fish right there. Look at that. That is what we're looking for. Oh my gosh. I saw those branches underwater. They were off the cover, sticking out a little bit farther than the rest of the wood. So I made a cast so I can get it down and slow roll it underneath those branches. And God, I love this, man. Look at that. That's a good fish right there. That's a fatty. You go back and say hi to your friends. You know, most of you guys are fishing after work, or you only have one day a week where you can actually get out and fish. So you don't have time to waste. What I found to do is pick an area that has the best of both worlds in it, make a short run out, fish your way in. As soon as you start to develop bites, just stick with the pattern that you're catching fish on, because there's no sense leaving fish to go find fish. And then work that pattern the rest of the day, unless it starts to wane on you, and then you can readjust from there. But this is the fastest way to find fish, especially in the fall, because we know they're going to be around the bait and they're going to start to be predicated on the bank. There he is. That's a good one. So today you got to watch. We started out and fished our way in, and we really didn't get bit until we got to the bank. And so then I put on the Norman Fat Boy. And we just started target fishing. We weren't doing anything crazy. We were just target fishing. And that's pretty much all we did all day today. Wait till you see this fish. Holy smokes. Got him. That is how you break down a fall day. When you get out, start out on near shore structure, get yourself towards the bank, Oh, that is, I'm shaking like a leaf. That's a beautiful bass. You guys, thanks for fishing with me today. This has been a spectacular day. That Norman Fat Boy, that comes through the cover and everything. So good. Oh, look at that. This never gets old. I do this all the time, and it's as exciting as the first time every time you catch one.
There you go. That's good stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was it in a nutshell, really. I mean, you know, we worked out. We started out connected to the mainland, you know, structure, and worked my way in to see where those bass were. They were already on the bank. And once mm-hmm. we went to the bank, the first little one I caught was the key, because that literally was the first piece of wood I threw the Fat Boy on and caught one. So I knew that if I targeted the wood, I would catch them. Well, the thing that I found out was the bass were not buried up tight on it. They were way off the ends of them. So what I was doing was trying to find long blowdowns that went way into the water to fish the ends of it. And that's where all the bigger fish came from. So what we did was we took not catching them to finding them, to fine tuning it to catch bigger ones. And that's kind of how it worked out. But with today's release of the first Signature Series bait, I thought that it would be a great video for you guys to watch because it's very pertinent to the bait that's being released.
I'm staring at it right now. It is released. The release date is May 2nd, correct, 2024. So this is like a first look at it. Now explain a little how this came about, Frank. And then I'm looking at it here. It's gorgeous.
Okay. So the reality of it is that I have been, obviously everybody knows, I've been designing baits and colors for a lot of years now. And, what has been happening is some of the color schemes, like I'll do a set of baits, like we did the FX series, which was a whole set that went into the Rogues first. The FX series is going to go into crankbaits too, but different colors of the effects, not exactly the same Rogue colors, although we may transfer some of them because some of them do relate. But anyway, so all this happens. Color 7 was probably the first real eye opener of what can happen when you have a lot of thought behind a color. Color 7 was very special because it was, you know, it was the incident with Mark. It was Matt's joke that was probably way too soon when you made it. so there was a lot behind that, and it was very successful, and it still is today, honestly. So with all this happening, we finally decided to do a Signature Series set of baits that will be numbered, will have my name, my signature on them, blah, blah, blah.
That's really cool.
But they're going to be collectibles. So there'll be a release every month, and you can get every single bait in that series. They are going to be very limited. There's going to only be runs of 600, and they'll be numbered from 1 to 600. And when they're gone, they're gone. It's kind of to keep the integrity of that Signature Series. And so that's kind of what started the whole thing. I had been doing paint jobs for the paint shop, for all of Pradco brands. You guys know, you've been watching the show long enough. You know what's going on. And so now finally, this series is going to be released. And I'm kind of excited about it because really, I mean, when you go to the tackle store and you see I see a lot of what I painted on the shelves in the tackle store. I know that I painted them. Nobody else knows. I mean, you guys watching will know if I, you know, if I tell you I did that color, but nobody else really knows. But this is kind of really front and center. It's nice. It's nice. I mean, it makes me feel pretty good, like that I'm accomplishing something. Again, it's that
accomplish a lot of accomplish things every week for every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's that competitive nature. It's that the little bit of ego, a little bit of, you know, competitive nature. But it's really cool. So here is, let's show the first color is charbroiled. It's in the Norman.
This is it right here. Let's see if my reveal works.
Is it? Oh, snap. Dude, that's good, man. That's good.
That's there it good. Is right there.
Okay, so that's the first one. That color is called charbroiled.
You didn't like the reveal, Frank?
Yeah, I loved it, dude. It
could have been smoother. The mouse in the middle with the little hand probably wasn't necessary, but I don't know how to get rid of that. It is what it is. With the limited technology that I have, this is what we're working with.
And it was a fabulous job. So you can see by the card that it's the number. That's number one. Of 600, by the way. And but you could see it's labeled on there. My signature is on the bait, but it's also on the bottom of the card, right there for the authenticity of it. And then I don't have a picture of the back of the card, but there's a description of the bait and stuff on the back of the card. And that'll come in, you know, the blister pack. And then that'll be what you have, basically what you get. So, you know, it's really funny because I actually did not do this color intentionally for the signature series. I wanted this color in the run, in the line, because it's a damn good color. And so I wanted it in the line, but, everybody over there liked it and wanted it to be the first signature series bait. I was being kind of greedy because I wanted to buy them to fish with. And so I wanted everyone else to buy them to fish with. So my suggestion to you is, you know, buy one or two to keep and buy one or two to fish with.
How many are in the series, Frank? Total? Are there going to be
600?
In the bait series. Like if I'm going to order one of each of these things just to keep in the tackle room.
Oh, you have to. I mean,
but how many are there going to be? You said you're releasing one a month.
One a month for a year, I believe.
So there'll be 12 baits. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, it'll be like a dozen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And all sorts of different baits, all sorts of different colors. Everything will be numbered though each month, and everything will have that iconic Scalish signature on it.
Right. And the funny thing is, so like I said, so I made this one, I made this color to actually go to Norman because I want to fish it. and so it's a signature series. So I wasn't angry, but I got kind of perplexed because I'm like, no, I want this bait on the catalog. Mm-hmm. And so I had to paint them for myself to fish with. I had to paint some for myself to fish with because I don't want to greedily buy a bunch of these and take the numbers off, you know, out of the hands of you guys.
Paint them yourself?
Yeah, I did. So this is what I'm going to show you guys right now. So I got to hide one thing on here.
Is that the great secret compound of how the color was made?
No. So this is actually the bait.
Oh, that's so pretty.
Oops. So this is actually the bait. So you see, I got like a ghosted silver scale pattern on the back. I've got a real fine. There it is on the head. You can see the real fine metal flake in it. But it's sparse. It's not real heavy. You know what I mean? It's real sparse. So this is like an olive brown marbling that fades out over chartreuse I have the quintessential white pearl gut bag, and then I have a flash of chartreuse underneath it over here. Okay. I literally this bait is like, this color is,
what is it called? What is that color called, Frank?
Charbroiled.
Charbroiled. Ooh, yeah, that's freaking cool.
It's really cool. So when I realized I couldn't get them to fish with, I had to go down and paint a bunch for myself. So I have them. So basically I got four to fish with. And so I don't have to go in there and buy like, you know, 20 of them so I could have them. You know, the good thing about the fat boy or any square bill for that matter, you almost never lose them because they don't dive deep enough where you can't get them back. You know, you can get them back. The fat boy, depending on how you line it, could go down 5-6 feet.
Haven't you done a whole show on how to do your square bill based on your line diameter, whether you want to throw 10, 12, 17
right,
to vary it a couple feet?
Correct. Because you can knock the depth out of it by going heavier line size. Which is really a cool thing, because if you're cranking points, for example, if you're cranking shallow points, you could put it on 12 or 10 and you could get it down 6 feet. And so you could be, you know, actively in the strike zone longer. But when you're fishing heavy cover, like big blowdowns and stuff, you could go 14 or 17 because you're knocking the depth out of it, because really the triggering characteristic there is how it ricochets off the branches. And that's where the trigger comes into play. Like some people say, well, why don't you just throw a spinnerbait in the blowdown then? Well, because sometimes it's that deflection characteristic of a square bill that draws the strike, where the spinnerbait doesn't have that draw power on certain times. I'm not saying all the time. I'm saying certain times where it doesn't have that draw power. So that's the advantage of going heavy line. And then I'll fish the fat boy in grass and I'll throw it on 17 and 20 pound line and just blow it right through the grass. It comes right through. So
that video you played at the beginning was an awesome example of rolling that fat boy over some shallow logs and how it comes up and then it goes down, and it was exactly how it was supposed to in my mind. Yeah. After reading Bassmaster, that's how it's supposed to look when you're running a plug down a laydown.
Right, exactly. I mean, and every time it deflects, you're waiting for that flash to come and get it. You know what I mean? It's just,
I know you've talked about how it's the bill and the angle and the shape of the body and all that, but it still blows my mind that you can take something with six hook points like that and crank it over wood consistently, like 9 times out of 10 when you have your setup correct, and it does not snag.
Yeah, it's crazy
when you're doing it right.
I mean, it looks like it would defy everything.
Yeah, 100%. The thing's like wobbling, and you look at the, you know, look at all those hooks there.
Oh yeah. But
when you have the right setup with the rod, the line, the build, the bait, the whole thing,
it just works
in unison.
Yeah, and the fat boy's nice because it's a bulbous. It's real bulbous. It's not a thin, flat-sided bait. It's very round and bulby looking. Gives it a lot of buoyancy, and it really helps deflect better off the cover. The other thing about this bait that I like is because of its shape and size, it moves a lot of water. So the bass can feel it coming. If the water's off color or dirty, they can feel that bait with their lateral line coming. And it's made out of butyrate, which we all know has a dull.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real dull thuddy sound. And it's one BB in here. It's actually not the BB. It's the ballast in the chamber. And so it's got
like a keel weight.
It just helps balance the whole bait out.
Yeah.
And these things, when you tune them up, they run. I mean, they climb and crawl over everything. That's why I like it so much. Plus, it's not a very long bait. I mean, I think it's 2 inches tops.
Yeah. Available at lurenet.com now.
It's available at lurenet.com right now.
And then does the loyal listener Capital BTL24 code work on this?
It'll work on anything that's not discounted on LureNet.
Well, this isn't going to be discounted.
I don't believe it is going to be discounted.
That'd just be a poor business model if you introduce it at a discount already.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. It's like, hey guys, have a lot of faith in the old creative.
As I said, that would be almost as genius as your motivational baseball speech, hey, that guys, we opened the show
go,
with.
Go out there and don't tank.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is in life. You win some, you lose some. Today, yeah, looks like it's going to be a loser. But you never know. But you never know. That's why we play the game.
That is so true. It is so true. But yeah, so, you know, I mean, it's interesting. It's very interesting because I didn't know we were going to really go down this path with, mm-hmm. with the signature series baits. And part of me was upset a little bit because I had a lot of colors that I wanted in the lines. And
like, you're talking like the production lines that,
yeah,
it's just, yeah, oh, new colors, and it's in the, on the shelves and in the stores.
Right. Right. And so, okay, you know, this is not going to be that. It's not going to go there. But you know, I mean, who knows?
I'm going to have to get a set. And then this time next year, we'll have a complete set.
Yeah. I'm going to try to get a set of the whole set too. I got the first three signature series baits I got already. I did videos on them. The videos are so cool. Joe did such a good job on them. I mean, I'm in my airbrush booth and I'm literally painting steps on them and stuff.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They had to be.
Joe knocks it out of the park. Like, you have one guy that does all your video stuff. Like, all those videos, yeah, that you see and stuff, that's like one guy.
Yeah, and he's
that good. Looks like a production team, like that video we ran earlier today. That's, yeah, that's an attaboy.
Yeah, he's good, man. Like, the funny thing about him is I've seen him go to extreme lengths to get a shot. And I'm like, dude, you're hanging your, you know, $X,000 camera over to the side of the boat when we're running 70 miles an hour. I can hit a wave and jar that thing out of your hand. He goes, oh, I won't let it go. Don't worry, I won't let it go.
So it occurred to me, you can now fish your signature series Frank Scalish crankbaits in your signature series BTL Frank Scalish shirt.
That is a fact.
That's kind of baller.
Yeah, dude, how fun would that be? We could have a mini tournament fundraiser for St. Jude's, and you have to wear the signature series shirt and you have to throw a signature series bait.
I like it. So here's something else that we've kind of kicked it around the, no, kicking the bucket isn't good. You don't want to kick the
no, bucket, right? We don't want to do that yet. Come on, man. I got a lot left to do in life.
Kick the can. Yeah, we've kind of kicked the can around a little bit on this, but I'll prematurely talk about it on the show.
Oh, you're scaring me right now.
No, it goes back to the video. And watching that video of you on the water breaking down that laydown and how you worked it in. And we're going to do a little testing on this later this year, whether it makes it to day four or not. But one of the things with day four with BTL in the past 20 years of Bass Zone and Bass Talk Live is always trying to do new stuff, different stuff, add to it, never staying stagnant in what we do. And heck, we had a couple hour long conversation, yeah, about what more can we bring to help the three E's of entertain, educate, and engage. And I think we both decided that live on the water, Scalish OTW, Scalish on the water shows are something that will be coming to day four with Frank Scalish sooner rather than later through Bass Talk Live, if all of the elements work and we can make it work with a time and scheduling wise with you. You have a fishery that you think has good connectivity for cellular, for good cell service. And I think it will be awesome if I could be sitting in the studio right here and cue you up on the pond where you've got a Fat Boy in your hand and you've got the hundreds of people watching live that could ask questions. You got the little earpiece in and we do a day four with Frank Scalish while you burn down the bank.
Oh yeah. And that's one aspect of it too. The other aspect is I'd like to do a day four with you and I in the boat, just fishing, just having a good time, just fishing, doing day four. I think we need to bring some other aspects of this to light. And so we're going to.
I'm excited for it. It is exciting just to see. I mean,
essentially, we're going to.
And yeah, I think just to see what the possibilities are.
I could give that motivational speech in the morning to start the day off right. Hey, we're on the water today. Hopefully, we're not going to blank. Hopefully, we don't choke.
Have you ever had that talk with your co-angler where it's just been just the most brutalist practice of your life? And you get in the boat, you have to go, listen, like, trust me, I busted my ass over here because I want to catch him just as bad, if not worse, than you do. But it's not looking good today. So if you're in this boat expected an easy limit or a lot of bites, you're in the wrong boat and you got the wrong guy. And you just watch their expectations just deflate.
Oh yeah, that sucks. It sucks the wind right out of their sails, man. The one thing I was with my non-boaters was always brutally honest with them. I was always brutally honest. To that point too, Matt. Like when as a professional angler or as an angler in general, you know if you're on them or you're not on them. I mean, you just know you just know. And I've had to have that conversation with a few of them, you know, and the day turns out to be a scramble. And at the end of the day, sometimes you are good, sometimes it's not good. You know, I made a decision like that in a Bassmaster event on Lake Erie. And after the first day, I was in 89th place with a whopping 10 and a half pounds.
Is that when you made the comeback?
Yeah, I made the comeback and
second.
I finished fourth.
Fourth, yeah.
In the event, but I broke down on the last day and lost 2 hours of fish time.
Physically broke down or mentally broke down?
No, physically.
Oh, okay.
I had an electrical boat. Yeah, I had an electrical short in the boat, and I didn't know where it was, and so the first thing I lost was the power to crank the boat. I got that important. Figured out. It was terrible. I got that figured out. And I was very far away from, like on Lake Erie, especially, I call it the point of no return. When you get so far away from the weigh-in site, you run the risk of not getting back if the weather turns on you. And I was well beyond the point of no return. And the weather started to shift. The long and short of it was, the first day of the tournament, I had found fish that were so shallow, it was ridiculous, and I was sight fishing them. They weren't spawning, it was in summertime, and I was sight fishing them. During the event, those fish literally were gone. Like, I got there, and I was super excited. Now, it was a little windier than I wanted it, because I couldn't see good, but I had marked all the cracks and all the boulders and stuff that I was fishing, and so I just went through and did it, and I only caught 10 and a half pounds. And on Lake Erie, you might as well pack your stuff and go home because you have no shot. So this is the non-boater thing. So the second day of the tournament, I had a hunch, and my non-boater got in the boat, and he was really kind of stoked because he drew out with me, and I had a fairly decent reputation up there, and he was really stoked. And I said, let's slow the roll, dude. I said, I gotta be honest with you. I said, I completely tanked the first day. My fish were not there. We can't go back there and fish. So I am going to practice today. We are going to find fish. I said, you have to be patient with me because I don't know what the hell is what I told him. So he's like, oh my God, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I ran back to where I had those fish and I started working my way out. Basically, all I was doing was I was on my outboard and I was idling back and forth, looking for little deposits, isolated stuff. And it was brutal, brutal. And about 2 hours in, we still haven't even made a throw. And this guy comes unglued. He is unglued. You're supposed to be a professional. You're blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, holy shit, here it comes. Because I knew he wasn't going to have the patience for it. Well, sure enough, as I'm idling out there, I see a little rise on the 2D sonar starting. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's going to be something out here. Because I'm in the flat part of the lake, mm-hmm. and I'm seeing a little bump. There's going to be something here. And I tighten up my zigzags and I start doing different angles. Sure enough, it comes up about 2 feet. And on the back side of it, it's almost a vertical edge. Doink, and it's small. And I see some fish on it. So I chuck a buoy out over the side of the boat. I hit a waypoint, chuck a buoy. He goes, are we fishing now? I go, no, there's going to be more out here. Now I got to really start looking. So I start looking all over. I find five of these things and they're small. They're only 2 foot, you know, 2 to 3 foot increments. And they're not very defined. One side had a good definition on it. They were almost like ridge lines. One side had good definition. One side was almost, you know, just a little flat. Just
petered out.
Yeah. Just like nothing. But I spin the boat around. I go to the first one. I got five buoys bouncing around out there. And so I spin the boat around. I go to the first one and I flip that drop shot out there and I'm watching it go down. And all of a sudden I see one come up for it. Boom, I got him. It's like a 4-pounder. I'm like, oh yeah, man, I get him in the boat. I catch another one. I go to those five bumps and I got a pretty nice limit. And the guy in the boat with me's got three nice ones. So, you know, I pick up the buoys and we start to go in and I said, hey, I got a hunch. I want to stop somewhere. The fish won't be big, but I got to see if they're there. And I make a stop and we could have caught them every single cast, but they were all like 2-pounders, 2.5-pounders. So I said, okay, cool. I got a plan for tomorrow. And, so then I went out and I looked for more bumps. I found a couple more and then we went in. No big deal. All right. So we weigh in and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in 14th place at the end of the weigh-in. So
which is unheard of to go from 10 and a half to make that big a move in a smallmouth derby.
Oh, on the Great Lakes, you can't, it's almost impossible to come back from 89th place. It's almost impossible. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in 14th place. I'm going to be solid because I know I can sack them on the third day. But we get into the weigh-in and that non-boater that I had that on day two, he tells me, he looks at me and he goes, I'm so sorry that I yelled at you. He goes, you fish out here. You know this place. I should have just been patient. And I said, no, dude, it's okay. I get it. We're all spending money to do this and nobody wants to throw money out the window. I totally get it. And it could have completely backfired. I could have never found a fish. So on the third day, they're talking about wind. And Matt, you've got a lot of experience on the big water. When they're talking about wind, if they say it's going to be, you know, 10 to 15, you just add the two together. Because it's going to be 25 or more. And that's how the wind goes on the Great Lakes. So the long and short of it is, the third day I tell my non-boater, I said, dude, I said, here's the plan. I got a place we're going to go. We're going to spend 20 minutes there. We're each going to get about 14 or 15 pounds. And we're leaving. And then we're going to go call them all. So he goes, yeah, that sounds good to me. And so, of course, that's exactly what I did. I run in there, and I think I made six casts. I think he made eight casts. And we're both 14.5-poundish range, 14.5, 15-poundish range. I go, let's get out of here and go call. And so poof, down the lake I go. Well, it's starting to get a little sloppy out, but nothing crazy. Pull up to the first bump. Boom, call. Boom, call. Go to the next one. Boom, call. And I'm, and now the wind's really blowing. So I got drift socks out now to slow me down even more. And I go to start the boat and it just goes. And I'm like, oh no. So I jump in the back of the boat. I open up the compartment lid. The first thing I do is I check my fuses. Then I go and check all the leads to make sure they're tight. Well, now the waves are starting. And I got one big wave rolls right in the back of the boat. I close the lid real quick because I don't have bilge pumps. I don't have nothing. So I close the lid real quick and I got to wait a second. I turn the boat around. I go, I got to try to jump start this motor. So I jump start the motor. I get it started. The first thing I do is turn the bilge on and get the water out. We get the water out of the boat. I run to the next bump I got. I call another one. I got two more fish I got to get rid of. And so I call that fish and I jump down. I open up the live well. I throw them in the live well. And I notice that I've got no live wells. They're not working. I don't know what's going on because my motor started. The live wells don't work. And this and that and this and that. So I got the motor started and all my graphs went out on the boat. I have no electronics. I have no nothing. And my motor's running. And I'm like, oh my God. I go, I can't find these bumps without locators and my GPS. I said, we're going to have to go back. And now the waves are big. Now I'm like, I can't let this motor now start because I've got 52 miles to go to get back and it's getting rough. So we head on back. I get back into to Sandusky Bay and I think we got about a little under 2 hours to fish yet. And I said, well, the only thing we're going to do is we're just going to start cranking rocks. I'll leave the motor running the whole time. And so I'm doing that. My trolling motor is like partially not working good. And I don't know what's going on. And I open up the live wells and I got nothing but foam in there. And my fish are starting to turn yellow. And I go, dude, we got to go. We got to get these fish in, weigh them in, blah, blah, blah. So I weigh in early, which I hate. You know how it is. God. And so anyway, my buddy wins the tournament and I took fourth and I was laughing. Cause I said, Paul, I said, I had that tournament won, man. I said, you are so lucky. And he goes, but you didn't. And I'll never forget that. Cause he's 100% right. I absolutely didn't. And he totally did. And so we were laughing about it, but yeah, I mean,
I love it. That goes along at the beginning of the crankbait video. I wrote down a deep line that you said. You said, we are going to see what we see.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to go up shallow. We're going to see what we see. I liked it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's what it is. You know what I mean? But we're trying to figure it out. But yeah, so I just thought that story's funny. It's a great story because Paul
and I hadn't heard that one before.
Yeah, Paul and I are really super tight. Yeah, we're super tight.
And it wasn't Paul Hirosky, was it?
It is exactly.
It was Paul Hirosky.
Yeah, it was exactly.
Is he still a
pharmacist?
Pharmacist.
Yes, he is.
Does he still run? What kind of boat? He ran a gambler.
Yeah, he ran.
He still run a gambler?
Yeah, he still has it. It's in mint condition too. It's like brand spanking new.
He was like a super nice dude.
Paul's one of the best guys I've met on tour, and we became fast friends. We have the same personality as far as how we fish, what we like to fish, very, very, very parallel. And we became really good friends when he, unfortunately, he had to stop fishing a little bit before me. And then when I stopped fishing, we we parlayed a couple team tournaments together. Well, I'd say more than a couple, like five or six. And I don't think we ever finished below third. We won a bunch of them. And then, and it was a lot of fun. It really was a lot of fun. But Paul and I, we were always in contact with each other. We went ice fishing two seasons ago. It was a motley crew. It was Paul, Frankie, me, and Schwenkbeck.
I do remember that. It's amazing that any of you made it back in one piece from that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Has he ever opened up that gambler with you in the boat?
No, I've actually never fished out of the gambler with him.
Oh, okay.
But I've been in gamblers before.
They're wild, aren't they? You can feel the floor, the bottom of the boat flex when they're wide open.
Yeah, it's okay. So here, I don't want any hate mail. Okay. The Go Fast boats are very different than a normal bass boat, with the exception of the new Allison. Okay. The new Allison bass boat is a machine, but I had another buddy of mine that had a gambler. Actually, two buddies of mine had them. And when you get in them, you are so low. You sit so low in the boat.
Like you're underwater.
Yeah.
Like the water line is above you.
Correct. And you can hardly see over the nose of the boat. And so for my purposes, especially on big lakes, I need to see in front of this boat. Because when you're fighting your waves and you're doing your rough water handling, you need to be able to pick your lanes before you get to them. And I couldn't in the gambler, because when you sit down, you're like in a race car. You literally go down in that boat and you are.
Doesn't it have like the silver rails that go around the top? And yeah, like a little, yeah, it's like a cockpit for sure.
You are in it.
And bucket seats.
Yeah, you are absolutely in the cockpit. And that is very uncomfortable to me. It's just very uncomfortable. I need to be elevated. I got to see what's in front of me. So, but yeah, I mean, they're fast boats. I mean, they're fast, you know, the gamblers, the bullets, the Allisons, God, there's another Go Fast boat.
I know. I literally had written down Gambler, Allison, and Bullet, and I couldn't think of the fourth one.
Yeah, and it's a Go Fast boat.
Yeah, we're gonna remember it as soon as we're done recording.
Yeah,
there's someone listening to it that has that fourth one going. It's a blank, blank, blank.
Right. It's a whatever it is.
There was another one that was close to the Gambler was the Sterling.
Well, the Sterling actually was Gambler's saltwater version.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that Sterling, I looked at that boat, dude. I had a little tinge of aspiration towards that craft, but I need a rough water boat. Yeah. I can't.
There's some guys that love the sports cars and other guys that want a jacked up truck. Doesn't mean that one's better than the other. They're both cool, and it's they both personal. Can be tricked out, and they both get you to the destination.
Right, it's personal preference. Yeah, if Todd were here, he would know every Go Fast boat.
Yeah, he had probably all of them.
He has, for sure. even his father would be like, "You guys are so dumb. It's the blah blah blah." His father's very engineer like. he's an engineer, and he's very engineer like. I'm going to have Todd's dad on the show. We're going to talk about, he's going to go through and tell you and show you guys how that five blade's built. I think that'll be a good
absolutely show. I think that's so cool that's you guys are working on keeping that rolling.
Oh yeah. Well, the business was Todd's dad's first, you know. Todd came into the business, and his father has no, he doesn't want to let it go. You know what I mean? That's his passion. You know, so, and he's a good dude. I've known him forever. I mean, I met his father before I met Todd, actually.
How did you get hooked up with him? Did you just walk in and be like, I need a prop. My name's Frank. And
well, yeah, I mean, it was really stupid because my first two bass boats was a Champion Mean 15, which was
Never even heard of that.
Yeah, so it was called the Mean 15. It was 15.8 with a 115 Horse 7 root on the
back. So it wasn't like the model wasn't the Mean 15.
No, yeah, no. Okay. It was it was called the Mean 15.
Wow, 15.8?
Yeah, it was 15.8 with 115 Horse 7 root on the back.
Wow.
And that was the first boat that I ever owned. And so I heard about hydromotive engineering and found out that they were probably, you know, a half hour, 45 minutes from where I was, where I lived. So I called down there to try to get a prop for it. And I didn't know anything back then about performance, running a boat. I knew as much.
You're
about,
like me.
Dude, I knew as much about boats as I knew about fishing back then. And it was all a learning curve. So I hook up with Todd's father. We go to the West Branch to run it because it's down the street from his shop. So we go to the lake to run the thing. He's talking. I don't know what. Okay, I don't know what he's talking about. Rake angle, pitch, da-da-da-da-da. I don't know. Will it make my boat go? You know what I mean? Just... Mm-hmm. I need a simple answer. So the long and short of it is then I got rid of that boat and I got a Champion 16.8. Okay. I went to a whole 1 foot longer. And then of course, then my next boat, I don't even remember what it was after that. It might've been in the old Nitro, or it could have been a Stratus. I'm not sure, but anyway, my next boat, then I met Todd and then it was
the rest is history. Hey, did races. You run Erie in that 15.8 Champion?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And my 16.8. I fished a Red Man. That's what the BFLs were back then was mm-hmm. a Red Man. I fished the Red Man out of my 16.8 Champion. Got swamped by, the pleasure boaters coming out of this one marina. Every time these big 35-foot cabin cruisers would come out, the waves would roll right in the back of that little boat because I had a 150 on it and it was so ass heavy. It was literally right at the water's edge and the waves would come in like a piece of driftwood right in the boat. I was such an idiot because I was kind of new to the tournament game mm-hmm. and I was catching smallmouth. They were staging. It was a pre-spawn bite from heaven. And they were staging on these dredge edges. And I was catching them all on blade baits. And so I'm like, I got four rods rigged, all with blade baits, 3/4 ounce blade baits. Listen to this, Matt. And 17-pound, not fluorocarbon, mono, because we didn't have fluoro back then. So I got four rods rigged exactly the same with exactly the same
flasher. Blade
bait. No, paper graph. X15 Lowrance papergraph. And so swear to God, dude. So I don't know what I'm thinking because I know I'm on a school of hundreds of smallmouth, but I'm thinking tournament. I got to get them in the boat as fast as I can. And so I fire the first blade bait out there. Vroom, I pump it. Vroom, you know how you feel the thing vroom, mm-hmm. vibrate. Let it fall on a slack line. Ooh, whack. I got the fish. I'm cranking them in. I flip him and the bass in the boat. Drop the rod. Pick up my other rod. Throw it out there. Get another one. I do this with four in a row. Now I got four bass flipping around, tangling all the line. Can't get them out. Okay. Boat comes by, swamps us. We get about...
So now they're swimming in the bottom of the boat.
Dude, they get away from me and they're swimming in the hole of the boat. Well, in the old, listen to this. In the old Champion, there was a space between the gunwale and the seat that the they could get in there and get in the hull of your boat.
And then you're done. There's zero chance of finding them.
You can't get them. You can't get them. And so I'm like, oh my God. So I'm shoving my life jacket in the hole to make sure they can't get through the hole. It was the biggest nightmare ever. And then I sat down and we're taking on water. My bilge pumps are running. And I tell the guy in the boat with me, I go, you know what, dude, we're going to go in and we're going to beach the boat and get all the water out of it. And then we'll come back out here and catch them. And so I beach the boat. the water's pouring out the bilge pumps. I got a little milk gallon thing, and I getting the water out of the boat. The boat starts to float. I like, okay, let's go back out. We go back out there. Now I'm one rod at a time, and we're catching them like every cast, and it's like nonstop. It was unbelievable. And what happened was, when I was coming back to come in, I couldn't get the boat on plane. I had so much water in the boat, it would not go on plane. And so I'm like trying to get back to the bay where we launched. And, you know, my dad's there, my family's there, they're all pumped. And my dad's like, he'll come in, you'll see him ripping across the water. You know what I mean? And here I am, I'm like, whoa, the boat won't even go on plane. It was so lackluster. You know, Frankie was about this big. You know what I mean?
But you caught him? I mean, did you place?
Yeah. I got a check, but it was a low check.
That's fantastic. You're trying to get returned to your awaiting family.
And they're expecting me to come flying in like a stone skipping across the water. And I'm plowing water like a snow plow. Whoa, trying to get back. It was so funny, man. But that's, and then I realized at a very early age that length means stability. So quit screwing around with the short boats and get something for real. You know what I mean?
I hear you. Well, congratulations on the signature series. The drop on LureNet.com, numbered 1 out of 600. We'll get a little sneak peek for all of the 12 signature series, I would assume, on BTL day 4.
Yeah,
a little heads up as to what's coming up. So I really enjoyed today. We had a little bit of breaking news as to kind of what's going on in day 4 land for the next year. New baits, new colors, a lot of education in there about finding fish, and then a couple of banger stories. So
yeah, I'm excited about doing some on the water stuff. I'm more excited about doing it together, to be honest with you.
I'm more excited about being in the studio and then managing the on the water sessions where I can ask viewer questions and kind of control the thing from behind the scenes. Cause when you're on the water and something goes wrong, you know, like we have the platform, like I get real jittery, like one of those deer in your backyard in October.
They're safe in my backyard. Yeah. I'm not gonna staple them to the ground. They're safe here.
Why don't you send us out with your best motivational speech?
Okay, I'm really excited about the signature series.
Hopefully it's not sold out by the time you get there. Your internet is a doubt, and then you're not able to get it because you have crappy internet.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, there's like I said, there's 600 of each. They're numbered. Have at it, boys. I believe they're available right now.
All right, this has been another edition of Day 4 with the man Frank Scalish. We'll be back next Thursday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, 9:30 Eastern Time. See ya.